It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Insurance companies are not in the business of reasonable. Insurance companies are in the business of maximum profit. And maximum profit for an insurance company occurs when they can charge as much as they can get away with charging, and that's very competitive, of course, for the insurance policy. And then on the other end is they pay the minimum that they can get away with paying on any claim. So what they do is they try to delay the claim, they try to minimize the claim, anything to pay less than they have to.
Private attorney Wayne O'Brien reveals the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim. And during this week's question and answer session, you'll learn how government public benefit programs give with one hand, only to take back with the other. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 50, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. During the foreclosure crisis, renters in good standing have been evicted from foreclosed properties with little or no notice, notwithstanding their leases. To address this problem and to stabilize neighborhoods, last month Congress passed and President Obama signed the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act. This law requires that new owners acquiring property through foreclosure honor existing leases. Thus, tenants with term leases and more than 90 days remaining on their leases may not be evicted until the end of their lease term. The sole exception is that a new owner who seeks to occupy the unit as a primary residence may terminate the lease with at least 90 days notice. In the case of leases with less than 90 days remaining in the term, month-to-month leases, and leases terminable at will, a minimum of 90 days' notice also is required. Section 8 housing voucher tenants have additional protections. When there is a Section 8 tenancy, the owner who is an immediate successor in interest at foreclosure takes, subject to the Section 8 voucher lease and the Section 8 housing assistance payments contract. The law took effect the day it was signed, May 20, 2009. In other news, also last month, Congress passed and President Obama signed the most significant changes to the credit card industry in 40 years. The new law includes restrictions on interest rate increases and credit offered to college students. The impact of the new law will be felt by most Americans, since 90 million households carry credit cards with an average debt load of more than $10,500. The restrictions limit increases in interest rates, which generally can be raised on existing credit card debt only if consumers have paid their bill more than 60 days late. Credit card issuers can't charge an overlimit fee unless the consumer has asked for additional credit, and can't impose late fees if they delayed crediting a payment. In addition, credit card issuers can't extend credit cards to people under 21 without verifying their ability to pay or getting their parents' permission. The new law comes on the heels of data showing that in the first quarter of 2009, credit card delinquencies hit an all-time high of 6.5%, and credit card defaults reached a near-record 7.5%. The restrictions take effect in 9 months. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is Bill of Particulars. A Bill of Particulars is a written statement giving details of a lawsuit filed in a general district court. It's a more complete explanation of why the person filing the lawsuit, called the plaintiff, should get the money or property being requested. If the judge orders a plaintiff to file a bill of particulars, the plaintiff will have a date by which to file it. The plaintiff will also have a later trial date and time. If the plaintiff doesn't file by the deadline, the lawsuit may be dismissed. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Bill of Particulars is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Caroline from Richmond, Virginia.
Thank you, Caroline, for being on the show. What question do we have this week?
Well, this week I'm in question about income of Social Security disability and the possibility of having food stamps, and how do they evaluate it?
Okay, can you be a little more specific about the question?
Okay, the one I'm trying to ask is, you have an income with Social Security disability, and then you have some food stamps to help you. Every year, your rent is going up about $20 to $30, and your food stamps go down $20. How do they expect for you to live and eat at the same time?
Okay, I think I understand the question. In other words, your Social Security income goes up, but it seems like your food stamps are going down at the same rate.
Yes.
Okay, well, Caroline, it may seem that way. It's actually not that way. At least it's not supposed to work that way. The way food stamps are determined, and by the way, food stamps are now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP for short. But in any event, food stamps are determined by looking at your income. You get certain deductions, and then you take 30% of that. And that is what is determined how much assistance you get. So the way it should work is that as your income goes up by a dollar, you'll get 30 cents less in food stamps. And the same formula actually holds true for housing assistance. If you're getting housing assistance, whether it's through a Section 8 voucher, whether it's because you are in conventional public housing or in Section 8 housing that's unit-based, where the subsidy is assigned to the unit, it's the same basic formula. They look at your income, you get certain deductions, they take 30% of that, and that's what's used to determine your rent and the amount of your subsidy. So again, as your income goes up by a dollar, your subsidy for housing assistance should go down by roughly 30 cents. It seems like the government's giving with one hand and taking back an exact amount with the other. They're really not. They are giving with one hand and taking back a third with the other. But that's the way the rules are written, and that's the way the subsidies are given out. The subsidies are given out based on need. So at least in theory, the more income you have, the less subsidy you need. The problem is that even with the income and the subsidy, whether it's food stamp benefits or federally subsidized housing assistance, there's still not enough.
You were very helpful to me on this question, but you know, I just don't think that it's really fair to the individual, but I do understand your answer. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you much for being on the show. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law office of Wayne O'Brien. Mr. O'Brien, in 1977, was elected to the House of Delegates, where he served 4 years on the Courts of Justice Committee. He saw firsthand there how our legislative system works and, more importantly, how it does not. He was able to see the influence of big insurance companies and that the rights of the average person were not being protected. In 1981, Wayne formed a partnership which handled only personal injury cases, and this establishment evolved into the largest personal injury firm in Virginia. In 2000, Wayne retired from the firm, but quickly discovered that he did not like being retired. A year later, he decided to return to a solo practice to help people with personal injury cases. Welcome to the show, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne, will you tell our listeners, what is a personal injury case?
A personal injury case is a case in which someone has received an injury due to the negligence of someone else.
What do you have to prove to win a personal injury case?
You have to prove that the other party was negligent, which means basically that they were careless, that they didn't meet a standard, of, we call it the reasonable man standard, that they didn't act reasonably, and that's pretty much what recklessness is.
Well, what if you were at fault in some very minor way? Can you still win a personal injury lawsuit in Virginia?
Well, Virginia is one of three or four states that still has the common law doctrine of contributory negligence. And what contributory negligence says is that if you're at fault, even one half of 1%, you cannot recover. As a practical matter in Virginia and in these other states that still have contributory negligence, we find that juries generally disregard that and pretty much return it, you know, if it's a situation where one party is 90% at fault and the others maybe at most 10%, that the jury will disregard the 10% and return a verdict.
But nevertheless, you're saying that Virginia is one of a very small minority of states where if you are, say, 5%, 10% at fault, you recover zero, at least in theory, rather than the 90 or 95% that you would ordinarily recover in another state.
That is correct. Most states have what's called comparative negligence, and there are several different forms of comparative negligence, which basically says that you compare the negligence of the two parties. So if one party is 90% at fault and the other is 10%, in some states you would subtract the 10 from the 90 and come up with 80%. So if the jury came up with an award of $10,000 and then applied the comparative negligence rule to it, they would return a verdict for $8,000. And I might clarify that while we talk about it being theoretical that they could lose their case because of contributory negligence, it still happens sometimes. It's rare, but it does happen where someone will be very minutely at fault in an accident, and a jury, based on contributory negligence, will refuse to give them anything.
If you are injured due to someone else's fault, what are you entitled to? What type of damages can you potentially recover?
Well, you can recover a number of different things. You can recover, obviously, your medical bills. You can recover your loss of income if you're employed. You can recover what we call pain and suffering, which is the inconvenience that you go through. For instance, having to go to doctors all the time is very inconvenient, as we all know. That's a part of your recovery, the inconvenience. The pain that you went through, the suffering that you're having, and the length of it. Scarring can be an element of damages. If you have a scar, particularly for a young woman, scarring is a very severe injury, particularly if it's on the face.
And it sounds like that is only an illustrative list of examples and not a complete list of...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just illustrative.
Okay. How long can you wait in Virginia before you file a personal injury lawsuit?
Well, the statute of limitations is 2 years in Virginia, and that means that you have 2 years in which to file suit. That does not mean that you have that you should wait 2 years before you begin your claim. But if you do not file suit by the end of 2 years, you lose your claim. In other words, you cannot recover. And, of course, the two-year statute of limitation is the general rule of thumb. It does not necessarily apply to every case. For instance, there are some kinds of cases, like cases against governmental entities, the state, the city, if you're hit by a school bus, things of that sort, where you are required under the law to give notice within 6 months of the accident. And it's laid out in the statute exactly how you have to do it, who you have to give the notice to, and what has to be in the notice. So if a person is involved in an accident with that type of a vehicle, then there's the same statute of limitations of 2 years, there's also a notice provision that requires you to give notice within 6 months, and if you don't, then you lose your claim.
And that two-year statute of limitations, or for that matter, that six-month notice period, when do those periods begin to run?
Generally, in most cases, they begin to run the date of the accident happened. Sometimes in medical malpractice cases, that might be extended because, for instance, if you're seeing a doctor and the doctor commits malpractice on you and you continue to be treated by that doctor, then your statute of limitations generally in Virginia will not start to run until you stop seeing that doctor. So in other words, if you have malpractice committed on you and you continue to see the doctor for another year after the malpractice occurs, then in reality you've got 3 years from the date of the actual malpractice. So you just really need to be careful. Most people want a hard and fast rule on statute of limitations, and that's why people go to law school, because there are a lot of ramifications and different wrinkles involved in statute of limitations. The most important thing a person needs to do if they're involved in an accident is to talk to a lawyer and find out when the statute of limitations is.
And we'll talk about lawyers later on, but first let's talk about insurance companies. Should a victim in a personal injury matter talk with the insurance company adjuster at all, and should they sign any forms that they're given to sign?
Generally, we tell all of our clients not to talk to the insurance adjuster and certainly not to sign any forms. One thing that people need to be aware of is that the insurance company adjuster is not your friend. He or she will try to act like they're your friend, and they will try to extract all the information they can get from you. They'll try to extract any kind of written documents that they can get to you. But the purpose of all of their calls and requests are to minimize your claim. In other words, they're not trying to help you by what they're doing. They're trying to hurt your case.
Well, what about writing the insurance company a reasonable letter? Wouldn't that get you some type of reasonable response or reasonable settlement?
Insurance companies are not in the business of reasonable. Insurance companies are in the business of maximum profit. And maximum profit for an insurance company occurs when they can charge as much as they can get away with charging, and that's very competitive, of course, for the insurance policy. And then on the other end is they pay the minimum that they can get away with paying on any claim. So what they do is they try to delay the claim, they try to minimize the claim, anything to pay less than they have to.
Well, now, one of the conceptions, or maybe it's a misconception, is that the insurance company has to pay your medical bills as they become due. Is that in fact the case, or if not, what is the situation?
No, the claim against the other party's insurance company, the insurance company for the other party will not pay your medical bills as you incur them generally. They will make a settlement at the end of the case when all of your bills have been received. They've received medical reports from the doctors. And in other words, you'll get one lump sum payment. On the other side of the coin, there is insurance coverage that you buy for yourself under your own policy. It's called medical payments coverage. And that's first-party coverage, which means that's a policy between you and your own insurance company. And those kinds of coverages, generally, they will pay you as you incur your bills because it's your own insurance company.
Well, and that's a good segue to the next question I had in mind, which is, what happens if your medical bills get paid by your own health insurance or perhaps by a government program like Medicare or Medicaid, and then you get a settlement from the insurance company that is insuring the person at fault? What happens there in that situation?
Well, it depends on whether or not a lien has been filed. Frequently, the governmental agency, Medicare, Medicaid, or Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance carrier, will send a notice that they have a lien for monies paid for the medical bills. Generally, it's going to be less than the full amount of the medical bills, and that will be repaid out of the settlement. But in Virginia, theoretically, medical bills can be paid multiple times. They can be paid by your health insurance carrier. They can be paid by, if you have medical payments coverage under your own policy, they can be paid there, and then they can also be paid under the other party's insurance policy. And the theory behind that is that the insurance company of the party that caused your injury should not benefit from your insurance coverage. In other words, you pay a premium for your medical payments coverage. There's no reason that the other party's insurance companies should benefit from that because they didn't pay any premium for that benefit. You paid the premium, so you're entitled to that benefit, and they shouldn't have the benefit of that.
Now, if the other party's insurance company asks you for a recorded statement, are you, as the victim, required to give that?
Absolutely not, unless it's your own insurance company. Sometimes on a medical payments coverage case, they will request it. But as far as the others, the insurance company or the party that caused the accident, no, you're not required to give that, and we generally tell our clients not to do that.
Now, a few minutes ago, you mentioned that insurance companies basically are not in the business of being reasonable. They're in the business of maximizing profits, and they'll do whatever they can to delay the claim. What are some of the tactics that insurance companies use to wear people out and just get them to settle for perhaps much less than their claim is really worth?
Well, you have to realize that insurance companies are just huge bureaucracies. I mean, they're like banks. I mean, they have multiple layers, and what they do is they go up and down those layers and for approvals. The person that you're talking to on the phone generally has very little authority to do anything. They're there just basically to be nice to you and to extract as much information from you as possible. A nice test, if you think the insurance adjuster is a nice person, a nice test of that is for you as an injured party to turn around and start asking them questions instead of them asking you questions. And what you will find is that generally they will not give you any information. They will expect you to provide all the information. And the reason they're doing that is because every time you give information, there's a chance that you're going to say something that's going to hurt your case, and you better believe that they're going to write it down or record it.
You've been listening to part one of a two-part interview with Wayne O'Brien, a Richmond area private attorney, about the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim. Part two of this interview continues next week. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about garnishment. The first tip is that garnishment means that wages, bank accounts, and other money payable to you gets paid instead to a creditor who has a judgment against you. The second tip is that some money can't be garnished. Pensions, child support, and government benefits can't be garnished. Wages can't be garnished if you make $290 per week or less after taxes. The third tip is that pensions, child support, government benefits, and exempt wages also can't be taken if you keep them separate from any other money you have. For example, in a separate bank account. If a creditor tries to garnish an account with exempt funds, seek legal help right away. For Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about garnishment.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. The show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you're hurt in an accident, don't assume every lawyer is equally able to handle your personal injury claim. Join us next week with part two of our interview with private attorney Wayne O'Brien about the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegebrink.